Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, welcome to Walls in Our Minds. I almost said the wrong show name. This is Terry Dodd, and if I can just get my screen right. Anyway, welcome to our new show called Walls in Our Minds, named after Red Beckman's book. Red, are you on with me tonight? Well, I don't think Red's on with us yet. Michael, are you there?
I'm here, Terry.
Let me introduce Michael Bednarik, the president of the Continental Congress 2009. Michael, really a pleasure to have you on with us tonight, and looking forward to having a great discussion about the Continental Congress and the Articles of Freedom and all the things that you have and your vision for where we're headed now. Would you like to start us out with just giving us a little perspective of your afterthoughts of Continental Congress?
Well, I am absolutely thrilled with the Continental Congress. I feel so blessed that I was able to be a part of it. I was a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout and carried the flag in all the 4th of July parades and, you know, basically have been proud of my country for a long time. And during that time, as I learned more about the Founding Fathers, I had always had a secret wish that I could have been there when they were writing the Constitution, you know, just hanging quietly in the background, promising to keep my mouth shut and just listen to all of the wonderful debate that must have gone on. And my wish was all but granted because we had 114 delegates, I think, in St. Charles, Illinois, people who had studied the Constitution, understood the principles of the Founding Fathers, and who were amazingly eloquent and articulate about these ideas. And I had one of the best seats of the House. I didn't get a chance to vote, but I was at the front of the room organizing parliamentary procedure and listening to all of these people talk about liberty in a way that really brought up the passion and emotion in me. And the wonderful thing is that it was webcast over the Internet, literally around the world, and we had an increasing viewership for the 11 days that we were in St. Charles. And the Articles of Freedom that have resulted are just incredible. It was such a historic event. Now, admittedly, many of the people in the United States don't realize how historic it was, but we are about to unveil the finished product from the Continental Congress, and all the people across the country who are currently frustrated with the status quo, unhappy about the trillion-dollar bailouts, worried about having health care forced down their throat, all these people who are concerned that the United States does not appear to be the country that they learned about in school, are going to have a tool that they can use to rally behind and to take back our government and restore a constitutional republic in this country.
Michael, we're getting a word from our chat room that they're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. It sounds like you're a little bit faint to me as well, so if there's a way to get maybe a little closer to your mic or speak up a little, that'd be great.
Okay, I will do my best.
That's better already. Red, are you on with us?
I'm on.
Welcome, Red. You know, we named this show, Michael, after Red's book, Walls in Our Minds. And So I'm looking forward to kind of going through some of the points and things in that book later on. But Red, do you have any particular questions of Michael? I know that you were looking forward to him being on with us tonight too.
Well, I just if I was a little closer, I'd pat him on the back because he was able to maintain an order and such, and I couldn't help but think as I watched all of that how that there had to be a lot of different opinions back there when the First Continental Congresses met, and we had the same thing there in St. Charles, and when I spoke there, I got there late on Tuesday evening the 17th, and you'd already been in session for about a week, and I got there late in the evening, and then I was to speak at 8 o'clock the next morning. So I really didn't have an opportunity to analyze what was happening, but when I started my presentation, I said that I was convinced that the federal government was going to be dissolved, quite similar to what happened to the USSR in December of 91, and that we're going to need a lot of good leadership when that happens, and I'm absolutely convinced that it will happen, and so this is what I was watching for. I was there 4 days, and I was watching for the talent and such, the concern and commitment that I saw. We're going to have some strong leadership in the future. And if nothing else, this Constitutional Convention of 09 had to be a classroom for future leaders. And that's what I've seen. And Michael, he had his hands full at times, but it was handled very well. And so my initial reaction was I really hadn't planned to be there. And now as I look back and I've had an opportunity to kind of digest and assimilate what happened, I'm just real pleased that I was there. And so my hat is off to Michael and how he handled the job.
Well, I appreciate that. The energy that was in the room was incredible. Everybody was passionate, and there were certainly a number of opinions in the room. And fortunately for me, Robert's Rules of Order does establish a procedure for allowing everybody, including small minorities in the group, for expressing ideas, for the group to analyze the direction, and as long as people were willing to adhere to Robert's rules,
it was obvious.
It was this channeling of energy, and we ended up working together. We broke up into subcommittees. I believe there were about 14 subcommittees. Terry, does that sound right?
Yes, that's about right.
Various issues. And the one thing that impressed me so much about all these people coming together, most people had never met. They were strangers from 48 different states. We organized these subcommittees, and as I was running back and forth trying to, handle all the issues that I was responsible for, I saw all of these subcommittees working until 2, sometimes 3 o'clock in the morning, analyzing the commas and the wording. And when the subcommittee reports came back, not only did the subcommittees identify the problems, which was, fairly expected, not only did they come up with really excellent and practical solutions to those problems, but the subcommittee reports were worded in a way that, frankly, I thought it paralleled the Founding Fathers in many cases. The phrasing was poetic. And many times I know that there were delegates in the chamber that were emotional as we read these subcommittee reports. And the energy just continued to build. There was a synergy that it really carried us through. And again, I consider myself so lucky just to have been a part of it and to have had like a front row seat of watching all of this energy come together. So it was historic, and I can't wait until 300 million people in the United States realize what was actually accomplished at Pheasant Run.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm sure you were glad to get through that first day, weren't you, with Robert's Rules?
Well, I've gone, as a candidate for president, I had attended somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 different conventions, and for two solid years I was inundated with Robert's Rules. So I've kind of absorbed through osmosis most of the basic rules. And the first 2 days were a little bit tough as people came up to speed, but once they kind of got the flow and the pattern, we started to generate a great deal of progress. And when you consider that in 11 days we came up with articles of freedom that are somewhere between 65 and 70 pages, I think the general public is going to be astonished with the symmetry and the beauty of our work output.
I want to know where you got this phrase, it's obvious.
I have been teaching since I was 5, and one of the things that I have discovered is that as people communicate back and forth, most of the misunderstandings come from omitting information that you assume the other person has. You know, I know what I'm thinking in my mind, and somehow we always assume the other person is thinking the same thing, and we don't. And so it's having studied communication in general and teaching in particular over the last 55 years, that has just become obvious to me that nothing is obvious. And when I did my opening comments on Thursday morning, I had the daunting task of talking about the history and significance of the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. I had to do it in 45 minutes, and I was also told to make it inspiring. And so when I commented that the only flaw in the Declaration was the phrase self-evident, which would be the equivalent of obvious, it was really just kind of an observation on my point. I really had no intention or expectation that the phrase obvious would become kind of the catchphrase for the entire 2 weeks. And I think that because it did, people were more conscious about their communication. They were being more defined, and they were deliberately being less ambiguous as they communicated within their subcommittees and when they were talking in front of the group. And it was just a lucky stroke that idea was implanted in everybody's head and allowed us to work together, you know, because nothing is obvious, and we wanted to make sure that we were communicating accurately with our fellow delegates.
Well, I know it was challenging, and I know that, trying to get delegates to all kind of work in a concerted effort is certainly much like herding cats. And I think you got a good taste of that up there, didn't you?
Well, I did, and fortunately for me, I was able to delegate some of that frustration by appointing people as the chair of subcommittees. And, Terry, I probably owe you an apology because you ended up with what I believe is the largest subcommittee on the Second Amendment. And
two of them.
I know that because I watched your subcommittee. I was standing. I would enter and watch from behind as you were trying to organize your own little herd of cats. And I don't know that that there were many issues more passionate than the Second Amendment at the Congress, and you actually had to break your subcommittee into smaller subcommittees just to handle all of the issues that you needed.
You know, it was a pleasure to work with that group. I was blessed that those 30 people really worked together well. I mean, if we had had the same kind of cooperation and creative power in the same way with all the delegates in the Congress, it would have been an amazing thing. I was really impressed with those 30 people that worked in that committee, because I'm telling you, to get as much done as they did in the time frame that they did, I was impressed. And I think that they put out a quality work as well. And so I was really, really blessed to have the people that I had in that committee.
Well, I consider myself so lucky to have chosen subcommittee chairs that were able to handle it. And I want to thank you for all that you did, because everybody was under stress, and there were certain people who took leadership roles, and you were clearly one of the people that was helping to guide that energy that was, you know, contained there.
Well, you know, Dr. Kate served on that committee, and she's actually listening to us. She's actually on with us, but she's not saying too much tonight. She's letting us have the floor, but she's in the chat room working, and I really appreciated her efforts in that. That was one of the first times that I got to really experience Dr. Kate on a firsthand basis. I had been studying and watching her work on the Texas Darling blog for quite some time. And I don't know if you got a chance to visit with her that much in St. Charles, but, you know, she has written extensively on the natural born citizen issue, and she is really, really well researched in Constitution and constitutional documents and issues. And it was a blessing that she was there, because she helped us put together the definition of militia that ended up in that Second Amendment report.
Well, everybody was giving their best. Everybody worked well into the night, early into the morning. And one can only say that this was a lifetime opportunity, and I think everybody was energized by the result, and people are now very eager, very anxious to get a hot copy of the Articles of Freedom so that we can distribute this to the people and move further down the path to liberty.
Well, what do you have any word on where we are with the Articles of Freedom as far as the rest of it being posted, so that we can get underway with getting people signed up for this?
Well, it's not an official word, but I was under the impression that the final draft would be available possibly tomorrow night. I anticipate that, and I don't want to set a deadline for anybody, because there were 70 pages, 114 delegates offering their typo corrections, and I am so glad that I was not on that committee to collect and process all of that editing. And so, but I strongly suspect, I would not be surprised if the final version was available on the website, articlesoffreedom.org, by the end of the weekend, Sunday night, early Monday morning.
Well, there's a lot of people that have been very anxious about it, and I was getting a little anxious too, but once they actually put it out to the delegates and got it out to the committee chairs, and I started seeing the feedback coming off of those comments and realizing, you know, the work that had been done, because whoever handled this for the first 2 weeks, they didn't just sit on their hands. There was a lot of work done on this document, and I went through and I compared a little bit to some of the original drafts and saw how things had been consolidated and put in a concise manner, and really did not only did they not lose information, but maybe it even gained information by making it a more consolidated and well-written document. And I think they've done a wonderful job. And when they put that out, even though there were some things missing and some things that needed to be fixed, You know, there was a lot of work that was very obviously done in that time frame. So I felt an awful lot better about the whole thing once I saw what they were doing and the direction they were going and then getting the feedback going. So my anxiety kind of went away, but there's a lot of people out there that haven't had that kind of insight or been able to reach a comfort level. People are just wanting to get it out there. I mean, people are begging for it. And even the 912 people, you know, I went to a 912 meeting last Saturday, and they were pressing myself and Kevin Thibodeau not only for getting the Articles of Freedom published and ready to go, but they wanted to know exactly what our plan was, exactly what we're going to do. And I mean, they were demanding, and it was like, you know, you guys, we didn't find out about you fast enough. We didn't hear about you as much as we wanted to hear about you. And we're wanting to know where you're going with this, because we're wanting to get on board with this. And, you know, you hear that and you're like, whoa, it's like a freight train that's just sitting there building steam.
Well, once it hits the website, I have no doubt that it is going to spread across the country like wildfire, that this is going to be a unifying document. It doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Constitution Party, or whatever. We all love this country. Your particular issue is meaningless if we cannot hold the country together and reestablish liberty for everybody. And I think that this is going to make us Americans again, that same feeling. I know that Glenn Beck wants to try to generate that same spirit of brotherhood that we experienced September 12th after the disaster. Everybody felt a personal stake in what had happened. People left their jobs, drove to New York City just to volunteer, to help out. And it was that spirit of camaraderie that I think our Articles of Freedom are going to generate cross-country.
Well, Red, you're being awful quiet.
Well, I wasn't a delegate. I was an observer. And I was just thinking here when I started my presentation on the morning of the 18th there, I brought out how that the delegates there at the Congress were under some rather significant handicaps. And I mentioned how that the founders, they weren't overloaded with television propaganda, and they weren't products of government schools or government churches. And this Congress... and most of the delegates, I'm sure, were products of the government schools, which is a handicap. And, of course, the major media is the propaganda machines are so busy and working so hard. And the delegates were able to work their way through that. And I was amazed, of course, at my age, I'm not computer-oriented. And I was so fascinated by all of the laptop computers all over the place. And that was quite a large room, the larger room there that they had. And people were communicating across the room with people across the room with their emails just across the room. And you might hear a little bit of clatter, perhaps, but I never really noticed anything. But it didn't disturb, and so they really had an advantage that they didn't have in the First Continental Congress. And they were making good use of it, and, of course, now you're talking about getting these Articles of Freedom on the web, and they didn't have that advantage. They didn't. They didn't have the printing presses such as we've got today. They didn't have the scanners and all of that. And so, the advantages that the delegates had today overcome those handicaps that they were working under. And so I think that there was enough young blood there, which really impressed me, the young people that were very much involved. It wasn't hard to tell that there was a commitment. There was a dedication. There was everything there to make the thing work. And like I said, I wasn't all that keen about going, but as I've analyzed everything since then, I can say that I'm real glad that I was able to observe what happened.
Well, the Founding Fathers had a wide range of age. Benjamin Franklin was born in 1706, so by the time he signed the Declaration of Independence, he was already 70 years old. But Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison were still very young, just in their 20s at the time. And so there was a wide diversity of age in the late 1800s, or the late 18th century, excuse me, and I thought we had a wide diversity at the Congress. We also had another similarity when they were debating whether or not to separate from England. People like Samuel Adams were agitating for independence and war very early on, long before the Declaration was signed. People like Benjamin Franklin was a negotiator. He was convinced that he could talk his way, you know, to avoid war with England. And so during the debates, some delegates were saying, we need to separate, it's time, it's too late for negotiation. Other people were saying, no, we can't, you know, disturb the king, we'll be hung for treason. And that same type of discussion was happening at the Continental Congress. Some of the delegates were eager to move on with this. We need to, you know, indict members of Congress, you know, put them in jail for treason because they violated the Constitution, and they were suggesting more radical measures. Other people were saying, no, we can't say that out loud. The Department of Homeland Security will arrest us. And so it was that same concern that one, you know, delegate pushing to, you know, push the envelope and other delegates being a little bit more cautious. And the result, as I read the Articles of Freedom, were a firm but measured tone. You know, this is wrong, this is unconstitutional, it is time to fix this, and these are the suggestions that we are making to the people, these are the demands that we are making of our government. And it was the perfect tenor, just enough, you know, determination to express our sincerity, to let them know that we're really not kidding. We want liberty, and yet nothing so dramatic or drastic that could be construed that, you know, the delegates in St. Charles were agitating for violent revolution.
Well, we're going to be taking a break in about a minute and a half.
I don't know what I can do. The government's making up all new rules. This is change I don't believe in. But there are those that plot and scheme. They think they have the right to change everything. This country's founded on. Give me back my America.
Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, on with my co-host, Red Beckman, and we have a very special guest tonight, the President of the Continental Congress, Michael Badnarik. And Michael, we're going to open up the phone line, so anyone that wants to call in and ask questions is certainly welcome to do so for the rest of the show, really.
Terry, there have been a number of people concerned about my volume level. I've called in on my mobile phone. If you want me to switch to the mobile phone, I may be able to get a better volume level with my mobile.
Right now, you're fine.
Okay.
So, yeah, when you started out, you were kind of faded out there a little bit, but you're doing fine right now. I hear you loud and clear, and I haven't seen anybody complaining in the chat room lately at all, so you're doing good.
Okay.
Michael, can you give me some idea of maybe what your biggest surprises were? You know, you have you understand, you know, Constitution and you have a tremendous background in that, but I've got a feeling that there was a few things at the Continental Congress that maybe just took you flat-footed. What were some of those things?
Well, again, parliamentary procedure has become obvious to me based on my experiences of the campaign. I suppose I was a little bit surprised that the delegates who showed up were not as familiar with parliamentary procedure as I might have expected them to be. On the other hand, the number of people who showed up who did understand the Constitution and had deep knowledge of various aspects of it and their ability to articulate those ideas. We had statesmen in St. Charles, and I was thrilled to listen to many of the delegates come to the microphone, not only to express an idea of liberty, but to express it so clearly that it was almost irrefutable. I was very pleased with the caliber of delegates that we had, and I am so proud to know most of these and have made many, many friendships during our time there in St. Charles.
We've got Brian Frank in here mentioning a little bit about the folks who, you know, were a bit reactive and kind of stole the show on one of the days there, and probably be a good idea maybe for you to make some comment about that situation.
During my opening comments on Thursday morning, I pointed out what I hoped would be obvious, that passing out rifles to the delegates, you know, would amount to nothing. There is no possible way that we would be able to force the issue in, you know, using force. And I also suggested that as delegates working together, we would accomplish a lot more working together rather than fighting against each other. And I recommended persuasion. The only way to bring someone to join your point of view is to persuade them with the logic of your arguments. And unfortunately, there was a small subset of people there who tried to force the issue. They wanted to basically eliminate many of the other ideas that we had come there to discuss. They wanted to elevate their particular issue to the top and possibly only issue. And I was disappointed that they attempted to strong arm the body, and they tried to use some parliamentary tactics that I thought were unstatesmanlike. And again, I am so pleased with the body in general because they were very polite. They were overly tolerant. We voted several times, and the issue went away, and it could not have been handled better. You know, we had a little bit of turbulency there, but everybody was exemplary, and as far as I'm concerned, it's a non-issue anymore.
Red, we're getting some comments in the chat. I just want to pass on to you. There's people that are saying thank you for the educational tools that you've put out there, and especially your seminar and some things. So I just want to pass that on to you. We've got a person from Colorado online. I'm not sure who it is. Can you announce yourself? Oops, caller dropped. Well, sorry about that. Please call back in if you'd like to ask a question, because they did have their hand up. If anybody else wants to call in, make sure you hit a 1 to raise your hand, and we'll get your questions in. Red, are you still with us?
I'm with you, and I'm just thinking, you know, I get these reports every day from all over the country. There are local groups all over this country. If there's a town there with a couple hundred people, you've probably got a group that probably meet once a week, or even just a month, once a month. But you'll find this all over this country. And the Articles of Freedom might become kind of a guideline and tie all of these groups together. There's a minor problem with so many of these groups, because there's so many of them where the leadership are trying to kind of jealously protect their local group and their own particular points of evidence and such that they want to push. And you know, these articles of freedom may just be something that will, you know, getting it on the web, it's going to put it out there available to everybody. And hopefully it'll kind of turn out to be the, I don't know whether I should call it the glue to bring them all together and head them all in the, you know, focus them in the right direction. But it could happen, because I don't think there's anybody out there that has the kind of material that the Congress put out, you know, covering such a wide spectrum and such. So I'm going to be watching this real close, because this is something that we really need. Is so that all these different organizations, there's thousands of them across the country. If it's a town or city, I can almost assure you, guarantee you, that they might just be meeting for coffee once a week or something like that. But they're out there, and they really need something that they can hang their hat on.
We've got our Colorado caller back. Welcome.
Hello?
Hello. Who's this?
Terry, it's Deb Griffin.
Hi. Speaking of 9-12ers or Tea Party folks.
So I'm just got in and listened and got your email and tuned in. And I just wanted to say to Mr. Bednarik how I've watched that class of yours, the seven-hour one, like 3 times. It was very helpful for me as somebody who's new and just waking up and needing a guilt-free situation to come up to speed fast. I found your class and Mike Holler's book, The Constitution Made Easy, to be the best, and actually Dr. Prentice's Free People, Free Markets classes to be just the 3 things that I needed. And I really just wanted to say that. I didn't think I'd ever have an opportunity to say that out loud to you, and I appreciate that work. And Mr. Beckman, I also understand that whole 9-12, not just 9-12, but all the different groups feeling like so many people out there want to know what they can do, how they can help, how they can get involved. And you're right, there's this seventh grade leadership jealousy crap that is going on that makes me just want to not even be anywhere near it. I'd rather just hunker down with my family and by email and letters let everybody know what I'm learning and let them discern for themselves, because I don't want to waste my time, and I feel like it's been being wasted. Anyway, I'm sort of scattered because I just got in, but I wanted to say that to Mr. Bednarik about the class, and
Well, I haven't confirmed the location, but I'm in communication with the people in Colorado. I may be coming to Colorado January 9th to teach my class. So if you'll if you'll keep an eye on my website, constitutionpreservation.org, which is in a complete total redesign. By January, it should be new and improved and far more, you know, functional. And my personal goal is to teach my Constitution class every single weekend in 2010. And so I'm hoping to organize a class as early as January 9th up in Colorado.
Well, Terry, I'd like to continue this conversation with you, and maybe you can pass it along to him. I know that we're the 912 Front Range Project is trying to put together Free People, Free Markets for that same day. So one of the things that came up during the actual 912 was that so many different groups were putting on so many different events on the same day that it made it very difficult. So I'd like to connect you with, you know, I don't know. Every weekend, that would be fantastic. I know myself and my caller have been talking about an idea where that might fit in really, really well on a sort of a tour.
Deb,
anyway,
it's very important
it really,
when we bring Mike, when we bring Michael in, it's going to be very important that that we do it on a day when we can get participation from all of the various groups in the area. And that day, whether Michael's here or not on that day, we are planning on doing an organizational meeting to really establish a game plan for how we're going to work in a unified manner in the state of Colorado. So there's going to be some organizational work going on that weekend regardless. So we do need to communicate. We do need to know what's going on. We also need to look at the ColoradoFreedom.net calendar and do some planning for that. But I don't want to bore our listeners with just what's going on in Colorado. But you and I do need to talk.
Sorry, this call is so scattered. I wasn't planning on it. I didn't realize it was a big national call. I hope I haven't bored everybody to death. But I look forward to speaking with you again. And people, please keep up the good work. Of all the different liberty groups and different things that I've looked into and trying to decide where to put my time, this seems like the most cohesive and the thing that has gone the furthest. And whoever sent me the idea about putting the Articles of Freedom in the Christmas cards, I'm totally doing it. That is like the most brilliant idea.
If you're in the chat room, Katie that came up with that idea, and that's one of our Colorado folks also that came up with that idea, she's in the chat room right now and she's listening to you. So she heard you say that.
Well, that was brilliant, and call me anytime, but I'm not a computer person. I've never even done a chat or a text or any of that, so I'm kind of a – but hook me up with these people, Terry, because I think I can help.
Thank you, Deb, and we will.
I promise.
Speaking
with you next week. Great.
Thank you, and thanks
for
coming on. We got a 662, area code 662 caller with a live mic.
Yes, I'm Jim Borland in Columbus, Mississippi. Danny Bedwold was one of the attendants from my hometown there, and I was glad to know that there was someone there that I knew. He and I became acquainted a few years ago and had kind of lost contact, and I was surprised and pleasantly surprised to see that he had attended the Congress. The one thing that I was curious about during the proceedings was the spiritual influence that was there. Were there opening and closing prayers given?
There was an opening prayer every morning.
Michael, we're having trouble hearing you again.
I said there was an opening prayer every morning. I don't think that there was an official closing prayer, and I believe they had a chapel open in the mornings where people could join together.
That's good. I think that's an important part of this movement, that as our founding fathers acknowledged the importance of the providential hand of influence upon their proceedings, I think that's also going to be the same in our cause.
Well, Danny says, hey, Jimmy, because he's listening to you. He's in our chat room listening to the broadcast right now.
Hey, Dan.
So any other questions, Jimmy?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
I'm very encouraged with what little I've been able to acquire so far from what you've been doing. I think in due time it will be the magnet that all these different splinter groups are looking for.
Just for the record, Red Beckman and I, we talk a lot about scriptural issues on our shows, and we certainly both agree that we are in a spiritual battle, Jimmy. So we welcome that kind of input on this show, and this is a good venue to talk about those kind of issues.
I was impressed because I saw a number of people, delegates there that were carrying Bibles with them. And that was one thing that caught my eye.
Thanks a lot, Jimmy. And I hope you keep listening here and come back anytime. We've got an area code 219 on. It's got their hand raised.
Can you hear me at all?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I was an observer on three different days at the Congress, and I have to tell you, I was absolutely moved to tears by the integrity, the spirituality, but also the passion. And I know that you were talking about the turbulence, and I saw some of that when I wasn't there in person. Whenever I could from my office, I would watch you on my computer. on the streaming live there, and I have to say that when I was there in person, I felt it was like a portal into American history, and it was because of the energy all of you gave off, and I found it extraordinary because just like the First Continental Congress back in 1774. They too had issues with, I'm sure, personalities and egos and agendas, and not to discourage anyone with what I think is coming up in the future with all these groups and all their ideas and ambitions. It's all right to stumble and fumble and trip over one another as long as we still keep looking at the bigger picture, because I think, and what I felt from this Continental Congress was that we're just being humans stumbling on our way, and it's going to be perfectly okay to have these tumultuous times, but as long as we continue raising consciousness, I think that'll be the key. Also, the other thing that I also saw, and I agree with the other caller from Mississippi, was that the spirituality in this place was obvious. And if anyone spends just even a morsel amount of time looking at what the founders were about, it was believing in something greater than oneself. Now, I'm a film producer. And in fact, some of you may know me a little bit from the closing ceremony because I provided that big American flag. And I also brought the reenactors for the closing ceremonies. But the point is, if anybody spends just a little bit of time understanding what the founders were thinking about, was that they saw that there was no way to change or transform governments without seeing the greater source, the greater power of the universe, God. And I think all of the delegates, at least at the very end, I saw a united body that believed in something greater than themselves. And I just wanted to say to all of you who participated, and also to all the listeners and viewers taking part in today's broadcast, is that this is something special. And I've seen many gatherings before, but this was extraordinary. And you should all be congratulated on the courage and commitment that you have given to each and every one of us in this country. So I applaud you and thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, thank you. You sent chills up my spine. May I ask your name?
Yeah, I'm Gary Foreman. And
Gary,
I'm from calling you from, thank you very much. I'm calling you from Valparaiso, Indiana. In my full-time life, I'm a film producer and director. I have produced a lot of shows for the History Channel. I got to relate this because it's tied into what all of you are all about as well. I produce a show that some of you may have seen. It was called First Invasion, The War of 1812. And it was a two-hour special on the History Channel. And I had a chance and the privilege to interview some very fine scholars, and including two presidential scholars. And one was Dr. Ralph Ketchum from Syracuse, and also Robert Remini from Chicago. And I was asking them the same questions on the same day. And I asked the first question I asked them before cameras rolled, I said, if the founders came back, what would they think of what we are today? And they actually, on separate times of the day when I interviewed them separately, they both had the same reaction, and they both rolled their eyes. And I remember them saying the same, answering with the same answers. And that was basically, number one, you got to believe in something greater than yourself. Number two, they'd be really disappointed that we have refused to be enlightened, which means to be informed and educated about who we really are. And number three, they'd be extremely disappointed that we're not participating on the local level, which is the foundation of our republic. So it was, as I was watching all of you put together this masterpiece, and some of you say it's not a masterpiece yet. It is a masterpiece. But as I was watching you each day, whether I was there or watching off the computer, I couldn't help but think about those answers those gentlemen gave me, because it was all tied in to the energies and commitments that you were displaying there. So all I have to tell you is that, this is not a secret, there are so many more people out there looking to be guided with this commitment to their country. There are patriots everywhere. And every time I think we're slipping and we don't have what it takes to pull this thing out, I am always, always pleasantly surprised to see the kind of fabric that is still existing in this American country here, that we still call these United States. And so the next level is for us to make that commitment and talk about it in every place possible, and to corner people. And the way I look at it right now, and then I'll want to turn it over to you, but I think this is you got to have a lot of people doing a lot and a lot of people doing a little, and that means bringing up the conversations where it's going to be uncomfortable to do so, but you got to bring it up. We don't have, I don't believe, a lot of time to mess around. I really feel that 2010 is going to be a monumental year in the history of this country. I think this is a chance to really begin the tidal wave of transformation. But we really have to accept the role of being uncomfortable. And also, this is a great time for all of us to renew our vows to becoming more enlightened and educated and getting brushed up on not just our history, but the things that allows us to be free people, and that's our Constitution and Bill of Rights. And I know a couple, I know several couples that on every 4th of July, they read the entire Declaration of Independence to each other. So I'm seeing people reach for material that I never thought that would be possible. And I think people like this Continental Congress, what you perform there will not be a secret. And I know there was not much or any media present at the moment at that time, but I think that is going to be, I think that's going to end up being your trump card, because media has made itself so irrelevant.
Gary, can I give you my email address and ask you to send me an email so we can stay in touch?
Yes, I'd love to do that, please.
T.C. Dodd, that's as in Terry Christopher Dodd.
Yeah.
T.C. Dodd at alpinedigital.com.
Okay. I'll be in touch with you, I promise.
Thank you for coming on. We'd like to have you back on the show.
I'd love to be back. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Okay, caller 207, you have a live mic.
Hello, this is Wayne Leach, first delegate from Maine. And
hello, Wayne.
I just have a couple of questions. I'm not going to be as lengthy as the gentleman, but he's hit the nail on the head as far as where we're headed, I believe. My question is to Michael about his website. Is his speaking schedule available there, or how would we know if we could gather a group together here in Maine of significant proportions, whether he could come and when?
The schedule will be, the website is being redesigned from scratch.
I'm not hearing you very well, Michael.
The website is being redesigned from scratch. It will be available January 15th, and all you need to do to get me to come to Maine is call me.
Okay.
We'll arrange it and post it on the website as soon as we have the arrangements made.
Your phone number's on the website? Or?
It is.
Okay. And one more question. Are there any plans regarding the items that were not addressed before lack of time? Any reconvening? I know it's early for that. We ought to concentrate on what we're doing now, but is there any chance that there's any thought been given to that?
Well, there's certainly a chance. We haven't had time to give it thought because
we're trying to get
the Articles of Freedom out.
Yeah.
But it's possible either this spring or summer.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be sufficient. We get this going first, and then we can concentrate on what we missed, because we didn't have as much time as people would like to have had. We do have a group in Maine here, Constitutionalists of Maine, that meets every Monday night. So Red Beckman hit it on the head when he said there's groups all around the country that are just dying, and people here are chomping at the bit to get a hold of this Articles of Freedom. And I encourage you to, and I congratulate you for what you order you kept and what we came up with for documents. I didn't contribute a lot, but I think I did a little bit. And if everybody does a little bit, we wind up with success, I think. All right, I'm going to let you go, and I wish you well, and I'll be looking forward to next week when we can get these articles out there, hopefully.
Thank you very much, Wayne. And, Michael, I want to let you know in about a minute and a half, we're going to go for about a 3 or 4 minute break. That would give you time to call back in if you want, because you are coming in, your sound is coming in and out, and sometimes it's difficult to hear you. We've got a caller from 603 area code. Are there any callers with a live mic that would like to ask a question before we go to break? I guess not. Well, Michael, if you want to, when we go to break, call back in on that other line, that would be really good. But, Red, any final comments before we go to our hour break?
Well, I'll be here after the break because I think that this Continental Congress is getting bigger by the day. I think that... you know, that the effect of it is going to it's going to grow and grow immensely here as we go, because I really believe there's thousands of groups out there that are going to want to see this, and it's going to give them kind of a roadmap that everybody needs, and it's going to mean that the people are going to be a little better coordinated if they'll use it. So it's looking better every day.
I agree. And we've got one more caller we want to try to get in before break. 512, are you on?
Yeah, Terry, this is Michael.
Oh, it is? You called back in already?
I have. I'm going to try to be a very efficient delegate.
Well, I can hear you a lot better. I can tell you that. So let's go to break, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes. Good music in the meantime.
One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see," and I saw, and behold, a white horse. There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne. And at his feet, they'll cast their golden crowns. When the man comes around. Whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down. When the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured 100 weight and penny pound. When the man comes around. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And his name that sat on him was Death. And Hell followed with him.
Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm here with my co-host, Red Beckman, and our special guest tonight, Michael Badnarik, the president of the Continental Congress 2009. And, Michael, you've had plenty of time to think. Any of the thoughts in response to some of the comments that we just got before the break?
I hope everybody can hear me better now. I really am excited about the Articles of Freedom and the wave of enthusiasm that I anticipate. Several people have commented about the numerous groups out there. People are hungry for this information, hungry for liberty. And basically this is the, you know, they talk about an idea whose time has come. The American people are now ready for this liberty, and I think the Articles of Freedom are going to be the primary tool for getting people unified and pointing us in the right direction.
I couldn't agree more. Red?
Yeah?
Red, are you still with us?
I'm still with you. You know, there's one thing that I want to bring out that that I think everybody needs to understand, and that is that, you know, I've been called the granddaddy of the tax protests and such as that. And, you know, the voices that were speaking out, as I mentioned to you on the phone the other day, I have these old copies of Reader's Digest. And some very, very interesting people were making comments about the way this nation was heading and how that, you know, that we were heading for disaster. And, of course, here we are. We've got the disaster. It's here right now. And But I enjoy going back and reading and knowing that there were those that were speaking out. I've got a comment here by a historian from 1940, and that's almost 70 years ago. And the guy, he spoke out and he said exactly what, you know, was going to happen to us if we didn't pay attention in this country, and we didn't pay attention, and so it's here. And these people, they were in every age back there, starting way back in the 30s and even in the 20s. We had people that were looking ahead, and what they seen they didn't like, and our Dr. Kate from Wyoming, I mentioned to you, Terry, an article by Senator Joseph Mahoney from 1943 article in Reader's Digest. And, you know, it just, I don't know, it had a tremendous effect on me because the heading on that story is America is being made over and we won't like it. America is being made over. This is 1943. We need to recognize that we had people back there that were trying to warn us and trying to get us to pay attention, and we didn't pay attention when we should. Now we've got a major process going on here, but I'm a lot more optimistic. And, of course, I've always been optimistic, as you well know. But I'm a lot more optimistic right now than I have been for a long time because of what I see happening and what I see coming. These articles of freedom are going to be something that is going, it's going to go out there and it's going to connect. You might say connect the dots all across this country. All these local organizations that have cropped up and they're studying the Constitution and such, and this is going to give them a tremendous boost, and I'm just thrilled to death by it.
Michael, what do you see the next best step for us now that we've got these Articles of Freedom coming out? How do you see us best getting people on board and getting people unified?
Well, I don't think that we have to do anything other than publish them. The people are hungry for the information. They're waiting for it. And I think that in many cases, the Tea Party rallies that we saw April 15th were almost spontaneous. I mean, there was no one person or no one organization that put all those together. People came together spontaneously. If they're doing it in Austin, we can do it in Dallas, we can do it in Denver. And I believe there were over 1,000 cities where they had these rallies. We don't have to do anything except publish the articles. The people will read them. They will recognize them for what they are. And there will just be spontaneous, I mean, people will figure out for themselves, and they will start doing things with them that, well, you know, those of us on the air right now can't anticipate. But it's that free range of ideas, the idea of putting them in Christmas cards is an idea that didn't come from Congress. It came from, you know, somebody that heard about them. And the American people are going to just jump on board. Everybody's going to have their own idea. There's no one right way to do it as long as everybody is in and participating. And it's going to be this huge symphony of liberty, all these different voices. And for my own part, I have been teaching my Constitution class since 2001. I never gave my students any particular direction. I said, okay, now that you understand the Constitution, it's up to you to go and find the best way to devote your energy. But now I'll be able to teach the class. I'll, at the end, hand them the Articles of Freedom and say, this is where we need to be going. We need to be unified. And I guarantee that my students are pumped up and enthusiastic at the end of the day. And we're going to be not only lighting the fires of liberty from coast to coast, we're going to be promoting these Articles of Freedom. And the tyrants who are in power right now will not be there for very long.
Well, Red has some feelings about that, pretty strong ones. Red, you want to contribute to that?
Well, you know, leadership, there are people out there that never had any ambition as to being leadership and, you know, being a spokesman for the Constitution and our Republican form of government. We are going to see leadership come out of the grassroots that is just going to thrill us no end, because we just... Well, I mentioned it there at the beginning when I made my presentation there on the morning of the 18th, how that we needed leadership, and it's going to come, and it's going to be there where it's needed, right at the grassroots, all across the country. And, you know, the web, uneducated as I am with the web, I do know that the message is going to go out nationwide, and it's right there for everybody to access, and that is such a tremendous thing. They didn't have that back there with the First Continental Congress, and, you know, we need it today because we are in a precarious situation right now in this country, and... we're going to see leadership that is going to be absolutely genuine. They're going to be committed. The delegates to the First Continental Congresses and such were dedicated people. They had a great concern for the country and all, and we're going to see the same thing happening right now in our day.
We have another caller from area code 662. Your mic is live.
This is Bruce Ollie calling.
Hello, Bruce.
I got a call for Mr. question for Mr. Beckman. I'd like to have him explain how he got his Montana PhD. I'll get off the line and listen.
I've got a Montana PhD, and that's in Montana, that stands for post hole digger, and I've dug lots of them. In fact, I was doing some post hole digging right today.
Are you still there, caller?
No, I think, I think Bruce took his answer offline. Is Dr. Kate with us? Is she on board?
Kate, can you go live? Or are you on the...
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I hear you.
Yes, can anyone else hear me?
Yeah,
we hear you
Dr.
fine.
Kate, how are you, my dear?
Hi there, everyone. This has been a terrific discussion, and it's a great chat room. We've got lots of delegates here and lots of questions, and it's terrific to hear this discussion. So I'm having the evening of my life just listening to all these great people here and callers. And I have to say it was just an amazing experience for me as well. There's just nothing that can replace it. And I'm moved by the caller who observed us for a few days and could see what we were going through. And I'm just very grateful. And last night, Michael, we were talking about the Second Amendment, and I will always remember a statement that you made at that time after we joyously passed that resolution. You said, "That is liberty. I'll never forget that." And so sort of began to feel pretty good about, you know, what that feeling is. I hadn't experienced that for a long time. So I'm very grateful to be a part of this. You know, Terry, I'll just be right here unless there are any questions.
Well, thank you. Do you have any questions, Kate? I bet you've been thinking of a few. There was also some in the chat room we may not have responded to.
Yeah. Well, it really, a lot of the questions were requested in the chat room. So for me, it's wanting to make the most impact now. I appreciate that there's a delay. I know why. You know, we all want these things out as quickly as possible. But I'm anxious to get going. I've sort of changed my blog to reflect what I've learned and have everybody's websites on there, and have joined the Sheriff Project already here in Wyoming. And, of course, no one was here in Wyoming doing it, so now I'm the state coordinator for that. And, you know, and I'm pretty excited. I've signed up for a rifle training course in the spring and looking forward to finding the common ground with people about how we move forward, you know. And there are so many people out there who are sick of the Democrat-Republican thing. And really, there is a lot of anger out there. And I hear the word the Constitution more than I have ever heard. And it's not just the Continental Congress. It's at the street corner. It's in the grocery store. It's on the signs and the protests. People get it. The sleeping giant is awakening. And I think the combination of people we have here tonight, I'm so honored because this is really the seed, and I'm grateful. So anyway, I have a million questions, and I have none. So I'll just leave it at that. That's okay.
The Congress didn't end when the delegates went home from St. Charles, did it?
That's
it's still going on.
That's right.
Well, it is
That's
merely
right.
in recess, and the delegates voted to give the president the authority to reconvene any time up until November of 2011.
Michael, we had a question asking Dr. Kate to ask you the difference between the capital C and the lowercase c.
I'm guessing that means the difference between capital C for citizen and lowercase c for citizen. I suspect that this is related to the 14th Amendment. And it's all covered in my book, Good to Be King. I may as well do a plug. They can go to my website, constitutionpreservation.org, and purchase my book, where I discuss that. The We the people ordain and establish the Constitution, and therefore we invented Congress. Therefore, we the people have more power than Congress. And in 1868, 3 years after the War of Northern Aggression ended, the 14th Amendment was ratified, or at least presumably ratified, to where Congress created a status of citizen called a United States citizen, spelled with a lowercase c. And the theory is that since Congress invented United States citizens, Congress has more power than United States citizens, and the 14th Amendment specifically says that United States citizens are subject to the jurisdiction of Congress. And so whether or not that is necessarily true, I mean, it's only true if people believe it. And this is what one of the concepts that I tried to address during the Congress is an appeal to authority. When we are children, you know, we appeal to our parents. Our mom tells us when we're going to go to bed, whether or not to eat our vegetables. When we get into school, the teachers tell us what the right answers are, and we're always trying to, you know, get our homework done on time. When we get our learner's permit, the police officer with the badge is the person or the authority that we appeal to. And it continues into adulthood. We appeal to the President of the United States. We appeal to the Supreme Court. And in some cases, we appeal to the Constitution. We appeal to the Bill of Rights. We appeal to some local ordinance. We're always looking for where do we get the authority. After the Supreme Court ruled in Keller versus Washington, D.C., the first ruling on the Second Amendment in, I believe, 67 years, I had several people call me excited that the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 in favor of Keller, that they ruled that I do have an individual right to keep and bear arms. Well, these callers were all surprised that I was unimpressed. I didn't really care what the Supreme Court had decided. And I pointed out that I have a right to life, whether or not the Supreme Court recognizes that right. I have the right to freedom of speech, whether or not the Supreme Court recognizes that right. And similarly, I have a right to protect my life by keeping and bearing arms, whether or not the Supreme Court recognizes that right. And so during the Congress, I tried to wake people up and encourage them not to look for a person, not to look for a particular piece of paper, but to look to logic, look to their own heart and soul, because we are sovereign. We are the source of all political power, and I know I have a right to life, and it is my responsibility to recognize that right to life in other people. I know I have freedom of speech, and it is my responsibility to recognize that freedom of speech in other people, whether or not the Constitution was ever written, whether or not the Bill of Rights were ever ratified in 1791. And so the theory, back to this 14th Amendment, is that by some subterfuge and by some fraud, we the people have agreed to a lower status of citizenship because, quote, they said so, or because the 14th Amendment says so, or for some other paperwork reason. Well, if Congress has declared me to be a 7-foot-tall purple rabbit, that does not make it true. I am not 7 foot tall. I am not purple. I am not a rabbit. I am Michael Bednarik. I am sovereign. I have a right to life. I know that. I know that most of the people on this phone call know it. And when the Articles of Freedom are published, everybody in the United States is going to know it, our government is going to know it, and eventually everybody around the world is going to know it. This is not just a United States issue. Liberty is for everybody. And this time, the Liberty fires are going to spread around the world, and we are going to change the world. It just may take us a little bit of time.
Last night we got into a discussion, Mike, about whether or not citizens are truly sovereign. And one of the things that came to my mind was your little story about where your free speech zone is. You might want to share that.
Well, during my political campaign, I was stunned when students told me that I had to stay in the auditorium because as a candidate, the auditorium was a free speech zone. And I was so startled, I almost fell off the stage. And again, it was this appeal to authority. The government said that I could talk in the auditorium. And I was very adamant when I told the students that anywhere I happen to be standing is a free speech zone. The government doesn't tell me what I can or cannot say. The government doesn't tell me where I can or cannot say it. I have freedom of speech because I've never met anybody big enough to shut me up. And we need to acknowledge that we, the people, are the source of political power, that we have individual rights. We give privileges to the government, and we can take those privileges away anytime we are knowledgeable and brave enough to do so. That's what the Declaration of Independence means when it says that we can alter or abolish the government. If we can abolish the government completely, then certainly we have the authority to make small changes to guarantee that the government is operating efficiently to protect our life, our liberty, and our private property. And any time the government is not doing that, it is well within our power to correct the situation. I'm sorry,
wow.
Was I a little wishy-washy on that subject? I can clarify my point of view.
Have at it. I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
I would like to add, I've been calling federal judges and all judges, I'm calling them government agents. And when we comprehend that the U.S. Supreme Court is just made up of 9 lawyers who are government agents because they're all on the government payroll, and they don't want you to comprehend that fact that they are just agents of the government. They have a conflict of interest. If it's a free speech question, and the government wants you to quit using your free speech, the judges can't make the decision. It has to be we the people, the sovereigns, that make the decision, not the courts, because the courts are made up of government agents. They're agents of the government. And, that a Kelo case, and this is kind of going astray here perhaps from the free speech, but New London, Connecticut, the local politicians, they got a ruling out of the U.S. Supreme Court, and my goodness, what a nightmare it has created. And you see, that decision should have been made at the local level by we the people. It shouldn't have ever gone to the U.S. Supreme Court where the government agents are going to rule on it. And so what we've got to do is somehow or other neutralize this comprehension that we have been exposed to all our lives, that the Supreme Court, my goodness, they're above us. They're not above us. We're above the Constitution. They're below the Constitution. And we've got to change the comprehension level of the American people from what we were propagandized to believe. And there's a difference between the propaganda we were taught and the reality. And we need to comprehend that.
We're going to take a quick break, gentlemen. We'll be back in about a minute and 15 seconds. This is a song written by one of our listeners, Ann Harpin.
when in the course of our land we got here under God's hand, but somewhere we lost our way. They say this needed to happen, but for what? I don't know. I don't know my country anymore. When you walk the streets in anger, take me with you. For I haven't seen times like this before. When wrong is right and right ain't right, like it was before. No, I don't know my country anymore. I don't know my country anymore.
Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds, and I think that's exactly what we've been doing, breaking down a little walls in our minds tonight, and I appreciate so much my co-host, Red Beckman, and especially our guest, Michael Badnarik, because that's precisely what these two men do continually, and they're educating the people, breaking down the walls in their minds. And Red, I hope I didn't cut you off. I think you were kind of in the middle of the thought.
No, no, I pretty well said what I wanted, and of course, the walls in our minds, that is the title of a book, but in the book I say that the lie the lie is the block, the brick, that goes into the wall, and our belief is the mortar that keeps that in place, and people are wondering where I got that title, and of course it happened when I was watching the Berlin Wall, as the people took over the Berlin Wall and they had their hammers and their chisels and they were chipping away at that wall, and it was the wall that they themselves had built. The politicians didn't build the wall. It was the politicians that gave the people the orders and the lies and such, the propaganda, and they talked the people into building a cage for themselves. And when the people figured out what was going on, they took that wall down. They're the ones that built it, and they took it down. And I, as I watched that, I was just enthralled by what I was seeing. And that's where the title of that book come from, Walls in Our Minds. Those people had walls in their minds because of the lies and the propaganda that they were more or less just absolutely saturated with, that the lies and the propaganda, and they broke free of that when they discovered that they had been lied to and all, and that they could be free. And so we've got walls in our minds in this country, too, and we've got to break down those walls.
Michael, I know you've got a comment to that.
I do. Again, you know, there are different ways to say the same thing. I point to the people in China, 1.5 billion Chinese people, or if you prefer, 1,500 million, five times as many people in China as in the United States. Now, those people are held in a constant state of slavery by a very small number of communist leaders. And my question is, how can such a small number of communist leaders hold 1,500 million Chinese people in slavery? And the answer is that somehow, some way, 1,500 million Chinese people believe that they are supposed to be slaves. Now, hypothetically, if I were able to teach my constitution class overnight in China, what would happen if 1,500 million Chinese people stood up tomorrow and said, no more communism, we are going to go with liberty? Well, it would be over. Communism would end almost instantaneously. The Chinese communist leaders would be crawling through the sewers and hiding, because there's no possible way that they could forcibly subjugate that many Chinese people. And so it is our manner of thinking that keeps these people in slavery. And while we may feel sorry for these poor, ignorant Chinese people who are not smart enough to stand up for liberty, all we have to do is look at the United States, 300 million Americans who do not understand the Constitution. They don't understand the fundamentals of liberty. And in many ways, we are subjugated by our own ignorance. We have allowed the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, the Homegrown Terrorist Act, all of these different legislative edicts, which have no constitutional validity whatsoever. However, we believe it to be true. We believe that 23,000 gun laws in the United States prevent us from exercising the right to keep and bear arms. We believe that there are special places called free speech zones in the United States. We believe that the IRS is a legitimate body and that we have to give the government, you know, 50% of what we make in order to fund these unconstitutional wars around the globe. And it is the ignorance of the American people that allows this tyranny and corruption to continue. The good news, as we've said several times during this program, is that the American people are waking up. The American people are angry. The American people are looking for a solution. And just in the nick of time, the Continental Congress has provided the answer. The Articles of Freedom are literally undergoing their final proofread as we speak. They should be available literally in a matter of hours. And once the Articles of Freedom hit the internet and start to spread across the United States, those angry Americans are going to wake up. They're going to recognize the direction that we have to move to go in liberty. And someone earlier said that 2010 is going to be the year, and I smiled because I have been saying the same thing. I don't know what is going to happen. I don't know exactly how we are going to establish our liberty. It's like at the beginning of the Super Bowl. You know, you don't know exactly which play you're going to throw. You know, you're going to run. You don't know if you're going to pass the ball or run up the middle. All you know is that you are not leaving the field until you've won the Super Bowl. And the passion and dedication of all the delegates that were in St. Charles have given me such a huge boost of confidence. I mean, I had always been dedicated to liberty. I had determined that I was going to save this country even if I had to do it myself. And with the 114 passionate delegates in St. Charles, I know I am not nearly working alone. There are many, many intelligent and passionate patriots across the United States. All we have to do is just share this information with them, and liberty is a foregone conclusion.
Well, Ryan in our chat room said it is a war on people's minds. That's the battle. And Kate said, yes, that is why they hope that we break out in violence, not ideas.
We are going to win this ideological war. We have the truth on our side, and it just requires a little bit of logic to derive the truth. 2 + 2 = 4, not because we say so here on the radio, but because it's 2 + 2 = 4. We didn't create the truth. We have just observed it and recognize it. Liberty is the truth. It is the path that everyone needs to travel in order to increase our standard of living, to increase everybody's prosperity, to regain peace and freedom in the United States. Not because we say so, not because the Continental Congress says so, but because it is a given fact, almost like the laws of physics. And the only thing the delegates in St. Charles were was intelligent enough to recognize the truth and to share it with the rest of the world.
Where do we read it? The truth shall make you free.
It all comes together, doesn't it?
That truth has been around for a long time.
Red, how about you? We've got about
it's obvious.
Red, we've got about 20 minutes left, and I'd kind of like for you to take just a minute and tell us what the difference between a true patriot and a false patriot is.
You know, I think this is so vital. I think it's so important that we understand that there are two different kinds of patriotism. There's true patriotism and there's false patriotism. And the two kinds of patriotism cannot peacefully coexist. This is why they had concentration camps over in Germany during World War II, because the true patriots were kind of a minority, of course, and they ended up in the concentration camps because the false patriots couldn't—they just couldn't stand to have them around. And of course, we've got the same thing going on in this country. The false patriot gives his allegiance to the government, to a political philosophy, and a true patriot gives his allegiance to the country. And as I have said in a couple of my books, at least, I've brought out how that governments are only temporary. They come and they go. And the junk heaps of history are piled high with governments, not countries. Countries survive, and I point out how that Italy has had over 40 different governments since World War II, and the people in Italy are doing quite well for themselves. They have a pretty sound economy, and the reason we know that they're doing quite well is because we never hear about them in the news. They don't have anything too much going on that's bad, and so as a result, the news people they can't find anything bad to report, so they don't have any news, they figure. And so in this country, we've got a lot of people that think that the government and the country are one and the same, and we have to overcome that. We have to reach out to these people and say, wait a minute, governments can become very destructive if they read that Declaration of Independence. Michael brought it out there how that we have the right to abolish a government if it becomes, criminal. And our government has become criminal because they're in violation of the law. They're in violation of the law that we the people wrote. And so I think if we can somehow get across to the American people that just waving the flag after 9-1-1 didn't signify as to exactly whether you were a true patriot or a false patriot. A lot of people think that just waving the flag and firing fireworks on the 4th of July is a demonstration of your patriotism. It takes more than that. If you're a true patriot, you're going to understand the law that we the people wrote to control this government. And we have left it up to the Supreme Court. We've left it up to the bought and paid for congressmen and senators run things. And, of course, we know that they have taken advantage of our trust. They have violated our trust. And now we have debts that are a major problem, and we have a lot of things that are problems, but we can take care of them. All we have to do is wake up and start enforcing the Constitution for the United States of America and that Bill of Rights. We have to, somehow or other, we have to put a value on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And with that, I'll let somebody else make a contribution here.
Do we have any other callers?
I don't believe we've got anybody online right now. I've asked a couple people to call in, which I, I'm hoping Brian will call in because he had some points that he was making regarding what you ask people when they tell you they're a patriot. Michael?
I didn't understand the question.
Brian chat.
When I give presentations, I will frequently ask people to raise their hands if they believe themselves to be a good patriotic American. And not surprisingly, everyone in the audience will raise their hand. And my second question will be to raise your hand if you know how many articles are in the Constitution. And rarely, I mean, do I have many people raise their hand. And my third question is, what is the standard for being a good patriotic American? I mean, how little do you have to know to still consider yourself a good patriotic American? Which brings us to a concept that I believe Red brought up, is that you have to participate. You have to be involved. If you're not involved, then your punishment is to be, you know, ruled by your inferiors. You know, there's another famous quote that the only thing necessary for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. And I think that we have a vast number of people prepared to get involved. They are looking for ways to, you know, participate. And 2010 is going to see a sea change of participation and activity and activism at all levels of government, federal, state, and local.
We have a live caller, area code 6864.
Hi there. Hi, Mr. Bednarik. I'm glad that you're on the show tonight. This is Brian Frank.
How you doing?
Can you hear me? Okay.
I can.
Yeah. I remember you telling that story about people saying that they're a patriot, and you basically put them back in their place. And I love the way you talk and the way you do things. I mean, you really make people think, and that's what it's all about, making people think for themselves, not taking orders from anybody else or listening to anybody else.
I try not to put them in their place. I try to give them a higher standard to shoot for. I just raise the bar and let them know that my expectation is that they're going to achieve that new level. There's no reason for us to all, you know, strive for the lowest common denominator. You know, we don't have the Olympics because people are trying to see how lazy they can be. We're always trying to, you know, strive to be the best. And while only one person can win the gold medal, by having the Olympics, we increase the number of people who are improving their speed, improving their strength, and improving the quality of human being that they are trying to be. And by teaching my Constitution class, I set new standards for people. You know, there's no reason for you not to be able to achieve far more than you've accomplished right now. We've got to tear down those walls in people's minds. If you believe that you can't, then you are absolutely right, because you're never going to try. So it's the story that we learned as children, the little engine that could. I think I can. I think I can. And we need to just continue, you know, pushing forward, always improving, supporting each other, working together. And, again, the Articles of Freedom are simply a target, a direction for all of us to work in. And people are thirsty for liberty, and they're going to get it. Not because the Continental Congress is, you know, a collection of, you know, really brilliant people, although it was. We are going to achieve liberty because the American people want it, they know which direction to go, and they are going to demand more of themselves and more of their legislators.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I can tell by part of your answer you have read the book, Think and Grow Rich. You know, if you say you can't, then you won't. In South Carolina, we're a red state. We're full of neocon Republicans, rhinos. And so I have a lot of work ahead of me, but a lot of people, I think, will get to sign this. Do you know when the next time you'll be in South Carolina will be?
No. Give me a call. We'll schedule something.
Okay. Okay. Well, that was all I have. Thank you for being on today.
My pleasure.
Thanks for coming on, Brian. You can just stay and listen. You don't have to get off the phone line. You can continue to listen right where you are. We have a caller from area code 603. You got a live mic.
That would be me, I think. Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Yes.
Hello. Yeah, hi, Terry. This is Rick Harvey from New Hampshire.
Hello,
Michael,
Rick.
Thank you. Well, hello, Terry. How are you? I'm glad I'm not in your presence. You work the people too hard. Yeah, I can remember you. You're the committee chairman. Kept me working until 3 o'clock in the morning. Jeez. Anyway, Michael, I wanted to say thank you. I'm sure glad that you didn't have to do this whole job by yourself, because God knows what would happen to us if that was the case. But this is the most incredible event. I just want to report one thing that happened here in New Hampshire. As a result of coming back and publishing some stuff on our local website, which we have on the Ning, which is run by Don Fairchild, we had a call-in, a girl named, not a girl, a woman, a grandmother, actually, call in Marcy Charette, and what a patriot she is. And she didn't know anything about what was going on until she stumbled across our website. She now is not only a coordinator of Merrimack County, but she's also on base camp. And some of you may have run into her. She's a real pistol. And it just gave me the idea. I did a little research today, and I looked at all the coordinator positions we have in different counties that are just standing there empty. And I was thinking, if you're listening to this broadcast and you're not already plugged into We the People, all you have to do is find a state page, and if your county coordinator position is empty, jump right in there, and you'll probably be able to get onto base camp and really start talking to all these people that are talking tonight, including Michael Badnarik. And so that's my suggestion for the day, is we can fill up these coordinator positions with people who are in organizations like New Hampshire Liberty Alliance and the Constitution Party and so forth, and start making these links and tying together these threads. And I absolutely concur with you, Michael, that as soon as these Articles of Freedom come out, we're going to see the 15 million people pop right out of the woodwork, because they're already there, they're already motivated, and frankly, some of them are more patriotic than some of us, I suspect. So anyway, thank you very much for your leadership and pointing out so many things that are obvious, and that's all I've got to say for tonight.
Yeah.
Well, Rick,
like
Rick,
I said,
before
I had...
you – go ahead. No, it's okay.
I just had something
to say to Rick before he leaves. So.
Go ahead. Say it.
Rick, I just wanted to thank you for the work that you did taking all of the civic actions from the various committee reports and categorizing them, and that your work did not go for vain, because I've had a lot of requests from people across the country and a lot of states asking for that list that we produced in that last Civic Action Committee for the civic actions. And so that has been going out.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure to be involved in that committee, no matter how long it took, and that was one of the most memorable evenings of my life, particularly talking to some of our 14th Amendment crowd at 3 o'clock in the morning as they perused my work, wondering, scratching their heads, wondering where all that was leading. All I can say is it's just as well we didn't get our report put out at the end of those 11 days, because, frankly, I think some people need some time to warm up to all the things the American people could do if the government refuses to listen to us. So, you know, I felt a little guilty, actually, after the fact, because I had sort of the feeling I single-handedly broke up the meeting or something. But we'll get to that.
I think
that.
It was a God thing. I really believe it was a God thing.
Let's blame him. That's good. I like that. Thank you. You're welcome, and it was a pleasure working with you. I hope to do it again real soon.
I look forward to
Michael.
It. Thank you, Mr. Harvey.
Yep, thank you.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Michael.
No, I am just tickled by this repetition of, well, it's obvious, as a metaphor for, well, no, it's not obvious. And, again, that was never my deliberate intention, but I am thrilled that that kind of permeated and brought attention to the fact that we need to work to communicate. Just because you're talking and warming up the air doesn't mean that your ideas are being transmitted accurately. And if we can continue to work back and forth and communicate genuinely with each other and cut each other a little bit of slack because we recognize that there are certain things which are not obvious, that will go a long way towards getting the people to bond together and work together and appreciate each other as individuals. None of us
In that regard, I want to point out one thing that a very wise boss of mine once told me. I was having a little trouble in real estate selling, and he brought me in and said, "Rick, what you got to learn to do is put the light on the other person." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You go home and think about it." And I did go home and think about it, and I realized I wasn't listening hard enough when I talked to people. I made a change in my behavior and sold a lot of houses in the next couple of weeks. So, you know, putting the light on the other person, these new patriots coming along, got to listen to them, got to listen hard, because they want to say something, and what they want to say is important to hear.
I agree.
Also, there are two things that you've indelibly inscribed in my soul. One of them is the obvious comment, which is you have many uses for that. Thank you for that. And the other one is I'm just very impressed with the lessons I learned in how you create a body. You did one. You created a lovely body. That's what we got here. We got one body, brothers and sisters. We're headed in the same direction. A lot of it is due to the way you handled that meeting, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be able to work with you. I look forward to continuing that work.
Me too. Thank you very much. That's all I've got.
Thanks, Rick.
You're welcome.
Well, Red, how about we've got about 3, maybe 2.5 minutes left here. How about you wrap up with your final thoughts about the true patriot versus false patriot?
Well, I think that, you know, just kind of spelling this out, it'll ring a bell with people. I think just, you know, when have you heard somebody talking about false patriotism and true patriotism? We need to talk about that. We need to explain that a little bit, and it'll register with people when they hear that, and they'll say, "Oh yeah, there is two different kinds of patriotism," and we'll run into these people that their allegiance is to this government, no matter how criminal it has become or anything else. But usually, they are beneficiaries of that belief system that the government is almighty and that the government has a lot of money that they dish out and all of this kind of thing. But when we explain the difference between the two forms of patriotism, we need to get this across to people when they're in court so that the juries understand true patriotism and false patriotism. It's just so vital that people get a handle on this, and that's our job. That's our responsibility. If we know this, why, we need to get the word out there. And of course, I said earlier, I didn't think that the Continental Congress is over when everybody left St. Charles. I think it is just like a snowball rolling downhill. It's going to be
meeting
an avalanche.
In our chat room. It's meeting in our chat room right now.
Yeah, it's going to be an avalanche, and you're from Colorado. You know what that is. And it can turn out to be that way, and that's something that probably very few really anticipated, including me. But I can see it happening now.
Michael?
So I wish everybody the best.
Michael, thank you for coming on. We got about 30 seconds. You get the last word.
My website is constitutionpreservation.org. That's how people can get in touch with me. And just know that I will continue lighting the fires of liberty one heart at a time.
Brian Frank's been posting your website in the chat room, so they've been getting it. Good night, all. Great show. Thank you for joining us, Michael. And thank you, all the folks who have been listening tonight. Good night, Fred.
Good night.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. let you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
To shine and see from